opposed to the price chart, you'd see something totally different. In fact, you'd see something quite scary, because you'd know, looking at the momentum chart, if you treated it as a price chart and drew your lines underneath lows and so forth, you'd say, oh boy, I don't want to break that line. Well, we're going to be on that line.
Michael Oliver, good afternoon to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm fine, Andy. How are you? Good. I hear you're cold in Atlanta. We're warmer than you are. We're in Colorado. We're 20 degrees warmer than you are. Anyway.
Yes, it dropped 20 degrees in the last 24 hours. So I'm freezing my tail off here. It's forgettable.
Anyway,
so I wanted to bring up your last two letters that I read. They just came out. Let's talk first about the general stock market, the overall stock market, the structure that you're seeing on that. You had compared it to, and this was your December 15th, I want to say that's when it came out, newsletter. And you talked about the structure similar now to our 1929. Talk about then, what do you see in the overall market?
Yeah, and also 87. It's not uncommon. First off, I think we've been in the bubble phase of a very, very old bull market. In fact, you go back 100 years, and you cannot find a bull market that had the duration, 15 years of upside. Interruptions here and there, but basically 15 years. And of the multiple dimensions, you know, NASDAQ's gone up like 18-fold, NASDAQ 100, S&P up like 8-fold. No bull market has ever done that. Never over the span of time, nor over the percent gain. Okay. Now, we sort of know why. Unless you believe, we have a good, strong economy. Okay, whatever. The Fed took rates of the last 15 years, 10 of those years it was at zero. Okay. Free money. Okay. So investors, when they have free money, do things with it. You know, they may commit to buy a house, build a factory, state governments build roads. People make errors based on that basic assumption of, money's free. It's cheaper than what it otherwise would be in reality, in a real market, a free market. So they did that for us. And then they also increased the money supply over the last 15 years more than any other 15-year period. So the ongoing degradation of the money unit, what it buys, what it's worth, what it's really, you know, what that piece of paper's worth, they've done both ongoing, despite the recent rate rise, and even getting up to 5%+ is nothing compared to history. Go back and look at a Fed funds rate chart going back 50, 60 years. You won't see, even that's a low level. Okay. So the market has been drugged for a very long period of time, and errors have been made on a micro and a macro level, not just in the market, but in, everyday realities. And when the bubble breaks, it will unleash the errors. Now, that's an issue of timing, because obviously it's even gone past the point of, what you might say is a fair balance. Okay. It's just like the dot-com. It was in the last 5 years of that bull market that you gushed on the upside because of the dot-com phenomenon. And it was all true. Fundamentally speaking, the internet bubble was quite valid. It did change our lives. For decades to come and forever, it really changed their lives more than even people thought back then. And yet we had a bubble, and it collapsed 82% in 2 years, NASDAQ 100, So, and it took it till 2016, a decade and a half, to actually get back to that nominal high price that the NASDAQ saw in the year 2000. So if you're a long-term investor and you basically have the view that, stock market always goes up. So basically, just keep your money in the stock market, right? Okay. Well, you lost 15 years of your life there, just coming back to where you were in 2000. Now, when you factor out the degradation in the money unit, and factor in the degradation in the money unit over that 15 years, we've not done it, but you could do it. Basically, money supply doubles every decade. So for 15 years, it's a huge collapse in the real spending value of the dollar. So when you measure something by the dollar and it goes back to where it was, it really isn't back there. It probably took till, anyway, you get the point. When bubbles break in the U.S. stock market, 29, mid-70s, dot-com, 2007 mortgage-based crisis, when you break, the Fed always comes in with all the ammunition they can muster, you know, back to full throttle monetary liquidity, rate cuts, anything they can possibly do, balance sheet increases, and buying ETFs outright like they did during the COVID event, anything they can do to artificially price up those assets that they deem virtuous and deserving of being priced higher than reality might otherwise have them. That's not commodities. They don't like commodity. You know, hell with the corn farmer. You know, he can suffer. We want those stock investors not to be hurting. Okay. Well, when we assess things technically, we see the same sort of, forget the price chart. Price chart looks lovely. Yeah, you had a break here today. You wiped out a couple of months in one day. You know, okay. But there are some structures below when we run quarterly momentum. Now, what do I mean by that? You measure each month's high-low close price, and you plot it on our chart. You got a price chart, right? Okay, everybody looks at it, weekly, daily, monthly, whatever. We measure those that price action in relation to the three-quarter moving average. Means for the last 9 months. And every new quarter, we adjust that average up because the quarter ends, new quarter starts, we got a new three-quarter average. So when you create the oscillator, what you're doing is you're plotting price in its relationship to this rising, in our case, a rising mean, the quarterly mean. It's almost the same duration as a 200-day average, by the way. And it's not the issue of necessarily of going back and breaking that average itself. Sometimes trend structures, when you plot the charts, aren't really, you know, the breakage point isn't at the zero line where you break the average itself. It might be 10% above it or something. But anyway, the point being, we have structures below us now on the S&P and the NASDAQ 100 and sectors within the market that if you wobble at the end of this quarter, as we're starting to do, and we sort of expected that, wobble several percent off the high that we just saw, we're at least a couple percent off the high, and close out the quarter such that, well, price is, you know, a big deal, a little dip in the price. That doesn't break anything on the price chart, but I'll be in you'll be in position on the stock market. As soon as you open the new quarter, when that moving average clicks up and the oscillator changes its metric, instead of the three-quarter average where it is this quarter, it rises, okay? You'll blow structure on momentum.
Wow.
If you looked at the momentum chart as opposed to the price chart, you'd see something totally different. In fact, you'd see something quite scary because you'd know, looking at the momentum chart, if you treated it as a price chart and drew your lines underneath lows and so forth, you'd say, oh boy, I don't want to break that line. Well, we're going to be on that line when we open next quarter if we're just fiddle-farting around right where we are right now, okay? You go much lower, you're going to default those structures. When you go back to 29 and you do the same study, or 87, and I happened to catch that. I didn't catch it in a big way. I was a futures broker at the time, and I personally caught, and my clients did, with some small put positions. But we caught the 87 crash. And I saw then the same type of pending structure to break once we got into the new quarter. And sure enough, that's what happened. You had this, there was a range in the S&P where in the summer, mid-1987, where they kept selling and selling and selling. You burst through in August. And everybody said, oh boy, breakout, you know. It's sort of like NASDAQ had a high back in July, and NASDAQ 100 finally burst through a month ago or so, shot up there. But I said, oh boy, breakout, new leg starting. And at the end of that quarter, which then would have been September, third quarter, 87, you wobbled back off just enough in the month of September. So when you opened October and the numbers had shifted, you blew the structure. And you blew it in the first week or so of October, 87. And by the second, you'd crashed. Now, I'm not going to argue that when we break these structures this time, and I think we are, that it has to crash. In fact, I can make an argument that, no, probably it's not going to be of the 35% dimension in 2 weeks, which is what happened in 29 and 87. Boom, you know, 2 weeks. Boom. Instead, it's more likely to be a sharp layered decline. I could be wrong. Maybe you do crash, but I'm arguing that when it shifts down, I suspect you're going to find some support at levels higher than what we'd call a crash level. Crash level being 30%+ drop in a matter of a couple of weeks. But still, you've started a major breakage, trend breakage, and downturn. And I think you'll have seen at that point, once you break these quarterly structures, you can then circle the market and say, that was it. And that was the top. And going forward, down in massive layers for the next couple of years.
Wow. Okay. So, and what do you do with that? So what does this mean for the other asset groups? And I'm want to relate it to you wrote in this very a letter right after that, a few days after that, you not only discuss stocks, but you discuss commodities, specifically gold. But you also went into agriculture, you went into oil. What does it mean for those asset classes?
Well, the fact is that when the stock market has a major bear, everything does not go down. I know a lot of people think, oh, if you're going into a recession or a depression or whatever, everything has to go down. That's not true.
You're quite different. Let me add in a lot of people on that. You have a different.
A lot of people think that, oh, if the stock market goes down, big gold's going to go down. Well, it's simply not true. Mm-hmm. A few instances during a gold bull trend, such as the bull trend from 2000 to 2011, where gold went from like $260 to $1,920. During the middle of that, there was a sharp break in October of 2008, coincident with a sharp drop in the stock market, which was already a year off its high at that point. But then gold turned around and continued on up, despite the fact that the stock market took years to regain its highs. Okay. So, but in history, if you go back like early 1900s forward and look at all these big cycles in the stock market, you'll see that during that time, gold went up. No, it wasn't month by month, week by week, inverse relationship, but it was a broad investment grade opposite trend. Now, back in the 20s and 30s, you couldn't trade gold. You know, the U.S. government came in with a wise from above and no, you can't have gold. Okay. But Homestake Mining was tradable, major gold mining. Homestake Mining went up 1,000%. As the stock market went from its 29 high to its 32 low, which was like a wipeout, you know, 80%, okay? And yet, Homestake Mining went up 1,000%, okay? Then when you go into the last 50 years since gold's been legalized in 75 and look at the bear trends in the stock market, like, you know, for example, the stock market went into a wasteland where, from an investment point of view, it was, you didn't make any money from the mid-70s through the early 80s. What did gold do then? Well, it went from $30 to $850 by 1980, okay?
Yeah.
And by the way, the Fed was raising rates all during that latter phase in 1980. Did that stop gold? No, no, okay. So Fed rate rises don't matter. It's the overall monetary degradation, which is ongoing, despite their flip-flops on rates, okay? And then you look at the period, 2000 to 2002, where the stock market got cut in half, NASDAQ got cut by 82%. And in 2000, if you bought gold by 2002, it was well off the low, and it continued on up till 2011. While the stock market, as I said, like NASDAQ 100, never even made a new high above its 2000 high until 2015-16. So all during that time, gold had risen. Well, the stock market was a wasteland. Okay. Then in recent months, however, starting from 2015, gold did start up. And the stock market was still in the middle of its bull. It was already 5-6 years off its low, but had more to go. And yet gold still went up and has matched, which people don't realize, the percent gain year to date, gold is up as much as the stock market. And who knows, in 2 days, it might be up more because stock market going down and gold firming from here. Okay. People don't realize that. Why is that asset category firm? It's not exploding. Gold's not exploding. It's going up nice double-digit percentages. It's actually, as of the November close especially, you were actually up more in gold and silver than you were in the S&P and the NASDAQ. Mm-hmm. And who knows, by year end, it may even be further. Nobody's noticing that. They're all fumed and fired up about, especially the tech end of the market, the leadership end. And it has all the attributes of a bubble. In fact, there's a lot of fundamentalists out there who recognize this, smell the bubble, can measure the bubble by all kinds of valuation metrics, which we don't use, and are highly suspicious. And yet, you know, when they say that, people laugh at them. And I understand that, you know, I've heard from some, I can't tell you whom, but from a major brokerage firm, a manager of a major office of a major well-known brokerage firm, who told me that the fever among his investors he's never seen like this before. And he said, and the leverage that they're using in the stock market is like triple, way more than he's ever seen customers use leverage in their stock positions.
Wow, that's scary.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe it goes on forever, right? Or it doesn't. Now, but the problem is, even if that's true, the question is when?
When?
You know, when does it actually break? That's a technical issue. But what we're arguing at MSA is we see the technicals now such that if you sneeze a little bit at the end of this quarter, as you're starting to do, and wobble, not dangerously price-wise off the high, but just enough to get you in position in relation to the new quarterly structures, momentum structures. Once you blow those, the bridge over the River Kwai comes down. And it could do it. It's likely to do it suddenly, because we usually, when you ambush a bubble market, it doesn't do it slowly. They pull the rug out from under you so quickly that you 20% loss very rapidly. Now, you know, put that in context. Most people, investors, average folks, are hurting because of other factors. You know, like the continued high prices at the grocery store and so forth, the mortgage rates and all that. But the one place they're having a good time is the stock market. So no wonder they're going crazy there, because it's working, right? Okay. So instead of being enthusiastic in five or six different aspects of the one area they're all focused on, and they've gone nuts. When you take that asset category and you take your retirement account and take 20% off of it fairly quickly, you don't have to drop a crash 30%, just 15, 20% quickly. Pain is going to occur. And there's no place else where there's pleasure. Okay. So it's, and what asset's doing well? That's when asset managers move the money flow over to the categories that seem to be doing well or have less risk, greater reward.
Yeah. That's a great point. And that's why you would have an inverse relationship almost to things that have underperformed, such as commodities, correct?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, look at Bloomberg Commodity Index, which traded for a year and a half now, either side of 100.
Yep.
Meaningless sideways range. It made its high in early 2022, a month after that war started. So the war didn't cause the big move in Bloomberg. It doubled in price prior to the war, the year and a half prior to the Ukraine event. It had already doubled, went from 60-something to 140 in Bloomberg. But even 140 was well below its prior bull market peaks. And right now at around 100, go back and look, you know, commodity prices are high, right? You bet. Yeah, right. Go back and look at 2008. It was in the 230s. And in 2011, when gold peaked, getting it 1900 plus, the Bloomberg was in the, I think, 170s. Right now it's at 100. So right. Even just from a raw price point of view, and you look at it and say, well, what's expensive, what's cheap? Commodities are still very cheap by their own measure, and certainly cheap compared to the stock market. So asset managers, when they need to move the money, a lot of them are ready to do it. You know, they've been in the market because they got to be, but they don't trust it. And as soon as you give them a sharp stick in the side, they're going to start moving that money. And they're going to look at what's working, what's been holding it, what's been going up this year. Well, gold and silver, despite the pullback. And then they look at commodities and they say, well, you know, they're still very cheap. They're not going down. Last year and a half, there's no down in the Bloomberg. Now, the Fed's taken credit for dropping commodity prices. But actually, commodities already dropped before they started their rate cuts. Okay, so it's in its own world. Our assessment is that Bloomberg Commodity Index, and I would say our emphasis now is on the food part, okay, was ready to turn up again.
The agricultural.
And I think part of that could be an asset class flow, where people move money into either the commodities themselves, or more likely into the stocks related to producing the commodities, managing the, you know, ag-related companies, oil-related companies, fertilizer-related companies. And they have no correlation to the stock market anyway. You look at the history of them, they go down when the market's going up, they go up when the market's going. That's where the money's going to flow, I think, into the stock market. And I think that will join gold at that point. Commodities will then rejoin gold on the upside.
Got it. We'll end on this. Talk briefly about gold equities, specifically the ETF, GDX. Is it going to catch a bid here?
It's a nasty beast. The best way to look at GDX is it will go with gold. Now, there are points late in bull markets where it deviates, but we're not late in bull market. When you look at the price level of GDX, just look at it. Better yet, go to XAU. Go back into the 1980s. It started then. Yeah, GDX started much later. But go to the XAU, Philadelphia Gold Silver Mining Index, okay? And it behaves like GDX pretty much anyway. But it's very cheap historically. It's very cheap in relation to an ounce of gold, which the miners are cheap in relation to that which they mine. They're very cheap in relation to the S&P off the page. In other words, if you saw the spread chart of the miners versus S&P, it's not really going down, by the way, the spread. In 2015, late 2015, gold made its low just above 1,000. GDX made a low, I think, was at 15. Okay, 15. Right now it's trading 34, 35. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, you go back to late 2015 when the stock market was having a pullback and it bottomed like in January, February of 2016. So fairly coincident with that gold low. Gold low bottomed in December and was up by February in the stock market. Also made an intra-trend low there. If you go back to that same time period, GDX is up almost as much as the stock market. And so what it means is, even though the price looks like hell on GDX, its spread relationship, its relative performance to the S&P has been ho-hum, meaning par. And most people don't believe that. But the spread chart looks like a base. In other words, if you look at the relative performance, you say, that's bottoming action. I mean, its relative performance is likely to turn up. And there's some metrics we can define where that occurs. And I think what the miners are waiting on are stock investors more than gold investors. When stock investors get spooked, they turn to stocks that look like they're going to hold low risk, higher reward, and start to behave well. Now, lately, when the stock market just broke last day or two, GDX broke too. Fine, so did gold. That relationship is abnormal. Normally, they're inverse. And I don't care about day-to-day seeming synchronicity. But I think the gold miners are likely to be the better place to be than gold even. Once the stock market breaks, and that it remains for MSA a key factor in a couple things. One, injecting real fuel into the gold uptrend. And two, causing the central banks, not just here but elsewhere, to go into full panic mode.
Oh, gosh.
And you know, and that's what drives gold is monetary predation. And it's not just, by the way, when we look at the dynamics, potential dynamics on the downside in the U.S. market, which is a bubble market.
Yeah.
We don't see that so much in Europe. Europe will go with us. But they haven't had the kind of move we had since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Nor is China. China's not even double where it was in 2009 load. It's slightly less than double. We're eightfold? But right. Eightfold? You know, okay. So, yeah, they could all go down with us, but there's two other markets that look highly vulnerable and look like bubbles like ours do. One is India, Sensex, and the other is the Nikkei 225. So when we go, you can bet that those two other major markets will join us. So it's not isolated to the U.S. It will be a global event, and the leadership will be the biggest bubble markets breaking.
That's going to be a sight. I'll have you on as soon as it starts.
Thank you.
Michael Oliver, it's always provocative and fascinating to chat with you. So everybody knows I am a client. I'm a very happy reader and client and follower of yours. People want to do business with you or want more of your work. How do they find you?
It's olivermsa.com, Momentum Structural Analysis. Take time, review our site. We've got a lot of archival reports there to look at. We discuss our methodology, which is not orthodox, technical work, it's different. And, you know, take your time, review the stuff, and ask for sample reports. We're happy to send them.
Yeah, I'm a very happy customer. So thank you so much, Mike. We'll talk to you in the new year. And if anything happens before,
it should happen in January. It should start.
Please.
I respect that.
Well, thank you.